Everybody will please come to order. For the record, it's Tuesday, February 14th, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Yeah. Today on our agenda, we have a report from the legislative auditor on fiscal notes, and we have with us today Jim Nobles, our legislative auditor, and Joel Alter, who did the evaluation for the fiscal note review. So welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and we appreciate this opportunity to present our report to you because I think, as you certainly know, there have been some real concerns and issues raised about fiscal notes, and that's concerning because fiscal notes are an important part of the legislative process. They are a mechanism established in law by which legislators are supposed to get assessments of the fiscal impact of proposed legislation. The value of those assessments is really dependent upon the fact that you want accurate, objective, timely information. And when there's a doubt about whether or not fiscal notes have achieved those objectives, I think it really draws into question whether or not we have a problem with just some fiscal notes or we have a systemic problem. I think we have to acknowledge that delivering fiscal notes to you during the legislative session is a challenge. As Yogi Berra once said, predicting is hard, especially when it's about the future. And that's what you're asking people to do with fiscal notes is give you a prediction about the fiscal impact of proposed legislation. And we have to admit that another challenge is sometimes there might be some ambiguities in that legislation because usually fiscal notes come in the point when bills are introduced and they haven't maybe been fully formed and refined. And so that's a challenge. But one of the real challenges is the fact, and Mr. Alter is going to talk more about this, is that fiscal notes come during the legislative session when there's a real time crunch. And so there are real challenges that we have to acknowledge, but I think that does not remove the expectation that we want fiscal notes to be as accurate, objective, and timely as possible. So you ask us to take a look at this issue, and as a part of our review, we looked at 25 of the fiscal notes that have been subject to criticism and concern. But to take a broader view, we also looked at 50 fiscal notes just from a random sample. And Mr. Alter was the manager of that evaluation, and he's going to give you a summary of our findings and recommendations, and then we'll be here for any questions that you'll have throughout the hearing. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'd like to turn to Mr. Alter.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Joel Alter with the Legislative Auditor's Office. And I would also mention that with us today also Julie Trupke-Bastidas and Dan Jacobson, who also worked on this evaluation. I'm going to start with first some overall conclusions and then work toward our findings. As Jim said, we did find problems in Minnesota's fiscal note system that suggest a need for some adjustment. On the other hand, we did not conclude that Minnesota's fiscal note system is fundamentally broken. In our view, fiscal notes prepared by agencies should receive close scrutiny. They're not always correct. They rely on assumptions, and sometimes those assumptions should be questioned. Our report suggests some statutory changes to the fiscal note process, but some of the improvements that that we suggest in this report are ones that would not be easily legislated. Things like improving communication between bill authors and affected agencies, and ensuring that fiscal notes are written in a way that's clear and transparent. Let me start with a little bit of background on fiscal notes, and first, although you're quite familiar with them, a definition. Fiscal notes are estimates of the public financial impact of proposed legislation. They are prepared in response to a legislative request. And I'll take a moment, too, to just differentiate fiscal notes from revenue estimates, another document that you often see. Revenue estimates are prepared by the Department of Revenue. They assess the impact of a tax-related bill. So they're more specifically focused than fiscal notes are. And our evaluation, even though we certainly became familiar with revenue estimates and talked with the Department of Revenue about them, that wasn't really the focus of our evaluation. Fiscal notes have been authorized in Minnesota law since 1974. There's nothing in state law, however, or in legislative rules that binds the legislature to abide by the estimates in a fiscal note. They are advisory in nature. Through contacts with other states and reviews of states' laws and rules, we categorized the fiscal note arrangements in all 50 states. We concluded that in 31 states, responsibility for fiscal notes primarily rests with the legislative branch. In another 11 states, including Minnesota, that responsibility primarily rests with the executive branch. And in 7 states, there is what we consider to be shared responsibility between those two branches. Just a quick overview of the process for kind of the sequence of steps that are followed in preparing a fiscal note. The process starts, as I said, when there is a request from a legislative committee chair for a fiscal note. It's often made through a legislative fiscal analyst. That request is formally entered into an information system run by the Minnesota Department of Management and Budget. MMB then determines which agency, or it might be several of them, should be assigned to draft the fiscal note. Typically, fiscal notes are assigned to an executive branch agency, but they can also be assigned to a legislative or judicial agency. The agency staff draft the fiscal note, and then after the agency officials sign off on the note, MMB reviews the draft. They may approve it. They may have more questions for the agency. But once the fiscal note is approved by MMB, then it is sent back to the requester, and it's posted on a public website. As Jim alluded to a moment ago, one of the challenges of the fiscal note process is that it occurs in a very compressed time period. And as we look at the red line in this chart, it shows an average over the past 11 years of the fiscal notes requested by the legislature broken into 2-week time periods. And you can see that the peak period for these requests is in the month of March, when hundreds of fiscal notes are typically submitted to agencies. And then we follow that up by looking at the completion of fiscal notes and when they are typically completed. And again, a similar pattern with the peak period being the last 2 weeks in March, and then a sharp decline after that. A few other facts about fiscal note practices. Legislators can request multiple fiscal notes if there are different versions of a bill. But for 84% of the bills on which fiscal notes are prepared or are requested, only one is actually requested. 83% of fiscal note requests result in a completed fiscal note. There are occasions when the legislative requester may withdraw that request, or particularly for requests that come in late in a legislative session, it may be a case that the agency never gets to it and completes the fiscal note. About 69% of fiscal notes are prepared for bills as originally introduced, but legislators can also request fiscal notes for amended bills or even for individual amendments. And a few agencies have the largest share of the fiscal note workload, and at the top of that list are the Departments of Education, Human Services, and Public Safety. One of the things that we looked at was the format of Minnesota's fiscal notes, and there were a number of things about the format that we think are working pretty well. We think it's a good thing having a summary table on the front page of the fiscal note that gives a summary of the estimated dollar impact to the state. We think it's reasonable that fiscal notes cover a 4 to 5 year period, rather than, as some you'll see in some states, they may only address the fiscal impacts for, let's say, an individual biennium. Minnesota's format provides a lot of opportunity for agencies, if they wish to use it, to provide narrative commentary. They can explain their assumptions, show their calculations, talk about alternative scenarios if they wish. On the other hand, one thing that we think doesn't work particularly well about the current format is for pension bills. In our view, the front page of fiscal notes in the pension bills that we examined were at times confusing. For example, we found that sometimes that front page does not effectively convey the state-level cost. At times it shows the local cost, but it doesn't differentiate them from the state cost. And generally the front page of the fiscal note doesn't talk about longer-term effects, such as a bill's impact on unfunded liabilities. One of the key areas that of concern that we identify in our report is the transparency of fiscal notes. If fiscal notes aren't clear and well explained, there's going to be some questions raised, some distrust potentially about the message of the fiscal note. Legislators may wonder, you know, where did that number come from? How did the agency get to that estimate? The law does require agencies to state their assumptions in the fiscal note, the assumptions that underlie their estimates. And in most cases, agencies do that. That hasn't always been the case. For example, there are times when agencies assert that a bill would have no fiscal impact, and there's literally nothing else in the fiscal note besides that assertion. But while we did find that agencies usually list their assumptions, they don't always justify them or explain them very well. An example that we talk about in the report, and we have examples throughout the report that you may be interested in, but one example of this kind of lack of transparency, there was a bill last session that would that proposed to consolidate what were called back office functions of state government. It had a fairly lengthy fiscal note with a lot of narrative discussion in that note, but what the note didn't do a very good job of explaining was it said that 75 new full-time staff would be required for what it called interagency teams to implement the bill. There was no real discussion of what those teams would do, no real justification for why so many new staff would be needed. In some other cases that we examined, we saw that agencies sometimes need to do a better job of just showing the math that helped them get to the estimate. While fiscal notes have not always adequately explained or clarified their assumptions, we concluded that a majority of fiscal notes that we reviewed from the past 3 years appeared to contain plausible estimates. We occasionally saw math errors or omissions that were apparent from just our careful reading of those notes. Usually those errors were small, but not always. For example, we saw a case where, in what appeared to be an inadvertent error, the agency left out a portion of the bill in its estimate, and the result was an underestimate of, in the fiscal note, of about $20 to $25 million. Some fiscal notes have offered estimates that are based on questionable assumptions. And starting on page 56 of the report, there are a number of examples that we give of that. But specifically, they fell into a number of categories. Cases where the fiscal notes didn't follow MMB instructions, where they were internally inconsistent, where they used methods that were not generally accepted ones for making fiscal estimates. And in some cases, agencies even acknowledged that they haven't always put the effort into a fiscal estimate if they didn't think the bill was going to progress through the legislative process. They didn't make it a priority to do a lot of homework on those estimates. There's also been legislative frustration about fiscal notes that show no savings on bills that were specifically intended to produce savings. We observe that this has been a struggle for some agencies, particularly when there are bills that propose large-scale reforms or proposals that are unprecedented in nature. Estimates for those types of proposals sometimes take more than a few days to prepare. And sometimes the agencies are, I think, naturally a bit reluctant about presuming savings that might or might not occur. Because fiscal notes are typically prepared by the agencies that are affected or that would be affected by the legislation, and not by an independent third party, there have been questions raised about their objectivity. We don't discount in this report the possibility that agency biases may sometimes play a role in fiscal notes. But I think it's important to say that bias is a very difficult thing to prove, and our report doesn't offer direct evidence of bias. We did, in our conversations and surveys of MMB staff and of legislative fiscal analysts, determined through their opinions that there certainly have been occasions, in their opinion, that agency biases have played some role in the estimates in fiscal notes. One thing that we looked for as we reviewed them was kind of overt evidence, biased language, for example, in fiscal notes. The state law prohibits fiscal notes from expressing opinions on bills, and what we found is that while there is occasionally a sentence or two that kind of push the limits of that, generally agencies have been pretty careful not to express opinions in the fiscal note about a bill. We also wondered whether staff from the governor's office, perhaps, or maybe top-level agency officials have ever intervened inappropriately in the fiscal note process, maybe to give a slant or a spin to a fiscal note that would not be consistent with what the aligned staff who are preparing the fiscal note feel comfortable saying and that they consider to be an objective opinion. We solicited information from those line staff, the fiscal note coordinators in each agency, and we solicited that information in confidence. We wanted to know whether there were instances they could disclose to us in either the current administration or a previous administration of those types of what they consider to be inappropriate interventions. All of these staff denied having seen instances of that sort. Again, this is not to say that there may not be instances of bias. It is a difficult thing to prove conclusively. But I will say that if there is bias in fiscal notes, that, again, kind of going back to what we mentioned before, I think the best way to identify it and address it is transparency. If the fiscal notes are clear about their assumptions and how the estimates were arrived at, and those things are open to question and scrutiny, then that's the best way to address it. Next, I want to comment on the timeliness of fiscal notes. When fiscal analysts submit a request for a fiscal note, they can designate a due date for that fiscal note. And if they don't designate a due date, there is a default of 5 working days from the date of the request. Working days exclude weekends and holidays. What we found is that 98% of fiscal notes have a due date of 5 working days or less from the date of the request. Many of them just have that default of five days. Only 2% of the fiscal notes shown in yellow are ones that where the agency was given a due date of more than 5 days to complete the note. And keep in mind that the agency typically doesn't have that whole period. There is an initial period where MMB is assigning the fiscal note to the right agency. There's also a period when MMB is doing some level of review of the fiscal note before it's made public. Over the past 11 years, we found that 31% of fiscal notes have been completed by their due date. Is that evidence of a timeliness problem? It can be, but not necessarily. As we explored this further, we talked with legislative fiscal analysts in particular because they are very much at the front lines of this process, and fiscal analysts pay particular attention to those bills that are going somewhere, where there may be a hearing that's coming up, where there is some scheduled action on the bill. And generally what we heard from fiscal analysts, and this was certainly not true in all cases, and they were certainly able to point out instances in which fiscal notes have not been timely. But generally the message that we heard from them was that the fiscal notes have been prepared prior to the time that they are truly needed. If there's a hearing that's coming up on a bill, if there's an action that's going to be taken, generally agencies have been able to provide the fiscal note in time for that consideration. One of the factors that can affect how long it takes to complete fiscal notes is just the workload, the overall fiscal note workload in a given year. And the chart that you see here shows in the red bars the variation from year to year in the total number of fiscal notes completed by agencies. Typically, you see somewhat larger workloads in the budget years than the non-budget years, not surprisingly. But interestingly, when we superimpose on top of this the average number of working days in each year that it takes to complete a fiscal note, generally the pattern kind of follows the workload. In those years when there are more fiscal notes requested and completed, those are the years when it tends to take a little bit longer for agencies to produce the fiscal notes. There are several other factors that affect how long it takes agencies to complete a fiscal note. When the request is made, the requester can designate whether it is an urgent request. And generally, we found that urgent requests tend to be prepared more quickly than others. It helps if the language of the relevant bill is written clearly. Also, some bills are clearly more complex than others and may have more detailed calculations or estimates that are required. And Finally, I think it's worth noting that this process is different to some extent in each agency. Agencies determine which staff are going to work on the fiscal notes and how that process will be reviewed by others in the agency, and that process can affect how long it takes to issue a fiscal note. We looked at the role of MMB in overseeing the fiscal note process overall. And again, MMB has several tasks that it performs. It assigns the fiscal notes to agencies. It instructs the agencies about the content. And it ultimately signs off on fiscal notes that agencies have prepared. We think MMB has done a pretty good job of overseeing fiscal notes, but we talk in the report about a number of areas needing improvement. One of those areas is the case in which fiscal notes are prepared by multiple agencies. That is, a single fiscal note that requires maybe four or five agencies to weigh in. And sometimes that type of note has proven especially challenging to do in a timely manner and with coordination of the assumptions. Let's go back a second. Some of MMB's instructions to agencies also need clarification. As an example, I think agencies have struggled with this issue of what are the circumstances in which an agency should propose to absorb cost within its existing budget. That's a choice that the agency has, and I think agencies are sometimes unclear about what's the right circumstance to do that. In addition, MMB's information system that holds fiscal notes is now 25 years old, and it's showing its age. Some of the changes that we explored in our discussions with MMB were ones where, in the discussions, we learned that it would be difficult to make changes in format of a fiscal note or just the basic functionality of the system, just because the system has grown old and it's getting harder and harder for MMB to program changes into it. We also looked at the extent to which fiscal notes address the impact of legislation on local governments. The main use of fiscal notes by legislators has been to understand the state fiscal impact of bills, particularly during the budget process. But as you know, many state programs are delivered or administered through local entities like counties and school districts. Minnesota's fiscal note law does not specifically state whether fiscal notes should address local impacts. MMB, in its instructions to agencies, has required them to address local impacts in fiscal notes. At a minimum, agencies are required to indicate through a yes or no checkbox that's on the front page of the fiscal note whether there would be a local impact from the bill. And over the years, 38% of fiscal notes have indicated that there would, in fact, be a local impact. On the other hand, fiscal notes rarely include a dollar estimate of that impact, and the narrative discussions also, as we observed, often leave a lot to be desired. They're often fairly sketchy about what those local impacts might be. A second way in which bills' local impacts can be explored is through what's called a local impact note, and these can be requested by the chairs or the ranking minority members of a tax committee, the Senate Finance Committee, or the House Ways and Means Committee. And unlike fiscal notes, local impact notes focus exclusively on that local impact, not on the state impact. An average of only three or four of these local impact notes have been prepared each year. MMB coordinates that process. They typically go to the local agencies and solicit input from them. It usually takes several weeks to complete a local impact note, and I think that's been one of the legislative frustrations. Once completed, local impact notes aren't very visible. They certainly aren't as visible as fiscal notes are. For example, if you go to the legislature's website for a given bill, you don't find local impact notes posted there as you do fiscal notes. One other issue relates to the way that local impact notes are funded. State law authorizes MMB to receive $207,000 annually in county aid, and that is specifically in law for the purpose of preparing local impact notes. We observe that MMB has used that aid for a variety of purposes, not just for preparation of local impact notes, and so our report raises questions about that.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
How much money has been appropriated from local aid for that purpose? Do you have a dollar amount?
Well, the annual amount that is available to MMB for that purpose is now $207,000. When the law was originally passed in 1998, it was $50,000. I think it moved up to $100,000 not too long after that. And so for quite a few years, it's been at $207,000 that is available to MMB. They haven't always spent that full amount. Sometimes they have. But I think the lowest amount that I've seen in recent years that MMB spent of that amount was $191,000.
So, Mr. Alter, do they track their time put into developing these local fiscal impact notes and then bill by the hour, or how is the reimbursement system set up?
Madam Chair, and MMB may be better able to comment on that. And just to clarify that the other activities that they have funded from this source have been, in MMB's views, somewhat related to local impact notes. For example, when there are rules that have a local impact, MMB has done some estimates of the cost impacts of those rules. I think at times for bonding projects that involve local impacts, they've done some assessment of that. Again, I think our concern has been a compliance one, that those activities, even though they're authorized in general by law, they're not authorized for this county aid that is specifically designated in law for the purpose of local impact notes. I'm not aware that there is a breakdown, although, again, maybe MMB can shed some light on this. I don't know that they separately track how much they spend on local impact notes per se, but I think initially we raised this as an issue because we were seeing, you know, with only a handful of local impact notes done a year, we didn't sense that that was consuming $200,000 a year in expenditures. So clearly there's a significant portion of the dollars that are going for these other costs, but I don't have a detailed breakdown.
Thank you.
One other topic to touch on before we get to our recommendations, and it is a significant issue, and that is the fact that official fiscal notes have not always been requested by the legislature as bills have moved through the legislative process. What Minnesota law says is that fiscal notes shall be prepared in response to requests from committee chairs. As we looked at the laws and the legislative rules of other states, we saw that there was a contrast between how other states typically handle fiscal notes and the way Minnesota does. Typically in other states, their laws or rules require preparation of a fiscal note before a bill can proceed past a particular point in the legislative process. In 2011, some Minnesota committees, particularly I would say in Human Services, relied a lot on informal fiscal estimates prepared by agencies rather than fiscal notes. And one reason is that there has been, I think, an understandable reluctance of committee chairs at times to publicly disclose through a public fiscal note possible ideas for bills that are being considered. What was unusual, I think, in 2011 was that there were instances in which those informal estimates kind of carried through the process. Rather than being followed by a formal fiscal note, sometimes those informal estimates were what was used as the bill moved through the process and ultimately as it was considered by the full body. And the problem with this, even though we think informal estimates have a very important place in the legislative process, I think the issue that we raise relates to the following. First of all, when you have an informal estimate, it isn't reviewed by the state budget agency, MMB. Sometimes it isn't even reviewed by the agency from which the informal estimate comes, that is the top-level officials or the finance officials. The informal estimates are not publicly available the way fiscal notes are, or at least they have not been in the past, and they're not subject to the requirements of the fiscal note law, for example, having to state your assumptions and some of the other provisions in the law. So as I turn to our recommendations, I want to start with the points made on that previous slide and just address what we think might be some possible solutions. As we've suggested, fiscal notes are not perfect, and sometimes they're far from it. On the other hand, we think it's good having an accepted framework for reporting fiscal impacts, and we think it's good that these are public documents. And so one of our recommendations is that state law or legislative rules require preparation of a fiscal note prior to a Finance Committee's vote on a bill's passage. We think there are some exceptions to that that should be applied, and I can talk more about those if you wish as we get to questions. But as a general rule, we think that a fiscal note should be attached to a bill when it is actually moving forward in the process.
Excuse me, Mr. Alter. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Alter, does that mean a finance division or this committee?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, and clearly this is something that could be a topic of discussion or for the legislature. I think our recommendation had in mind that divisions would have a fiscal note when they act on a bill. You know, if for some reason it was not possible to have a fiscal note at the time the division acted, it might be possible to move the legislation contingent on a fiscal note being prepared before the next step. But I think it seems to us that there's a lot of important work done at the division level, and ideally it would be good to have a fiscal note in hand at the time the division acts.
I think what we've seen sometimes is that people coming in don't think there's a fiscal note attached, and they may have the bill heard in the original committee, and then through the process of the testimony, someone thinks, well, I think this could have a note attached to it, and the analyst submits a request, and then by the time it comes here, there's something. But it might be showing nothing, but there is a fiscal note that has been developed for it.
Madam Chair, I think that's a good point. And clearly, I mean, the fiscal note process should not hold up legislation that is moving forward if possible. And so that situation just mentioned where there may be occasions where it may be reasonable to take action on a bill, but to expect that that fiscal note will be ready for the next step in the process.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, it is possible for the division to just lay the bill aside while the fiscal note's presented, or if it has to go to another committee or another division, more accurately, you know, it can go there and then come back to the original committee. Meanwhile, the fiscal note can be prepared. It does seem to make sense to keep it in the committee or the division until the work is all done. And, you know, we get so deep in the weeds in this committee sometimes because that work isn't done. And I think it's a better process to do as suggested and just leave it there until it needs to be someplace else. You know, at the end of session, sometimes that just isn't going to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. But certainly in February it can.
I know an example from last year is that I believe the Commerce Committee heard a bill related to insurance for auto accidents, and the opponents thought that it would have a fiscal note for the Human Services Division if more people were unable to continue their benefits for a lengthy period of time, that they might end up falling back on some of the state's programs. And so then a fiscal note was requested even though the bill hadn't been sent to Health and Human Services at that point. It had been sent here. And there was a fiscal note that arrived when it came here, but Commerce actually wouldn't have, their budget would not have been affected. It was potentially affecting another budget division, and it did come back showing just nominal or nearly nothing. But you know, that's how things work sometimes. They pop up and someone realizes that it might have an effect somewhere else. But it may not be the committee where the bill is actually even being heard. So it's hard to know on occasion those incidences happen, and where the bill is at the time is where it's going to have to be reviewed.
Madam Chair, one other comment on this. As we looked at other states' laws and rules, and it varies quite a bit among those states, but you'll find some states where the requirement is that a fiscal note must be completed before the full body, the House or the Senate, acts on the bill, and others where there is a requirement for that fiscal note to be in place at an earlier stage in the process. And I think our thinking was, again, perhaps along the lines of what Senator Higgins said, is that, you know, the earlier the better, because there's a lot of work that's being done at the committee level, and rather than waiting until it gets to the floor and then recognizing that perhaps there's an impact here, But again, the experience in other states, even though they typically have a requirement that a fiscal note be in place by some point in the process, it can range from some states where it's required at introduction of the bill and some states where it's required before the full body acts on the bill. In addition, and I think it's related to that previous recommendation, we think legislators have reasonable concerns about public disclosure of fiscal notes prior to a bill's introduction. So while we recommend that there be a publicly available fiscal note prior to a bill being voted on by a finance committee, we also think that fiscal notes should be classified as not public until the bills are introduced. And I should just say, you know, that's similar to kind of your expectation if you're working with the revisor's office or even with legislative staff on preparing a bill. There is an understanding of confidentiality, and for the revisor's office, a requirement in law of confidentiality. And we think that's reasonable, and that with fiscal notes for bills that have not yet been introduced, the bill language, the fiscal note request, the document that's prepared, until the bill is introduced, it's reasonable for those to be classified as not public. We also think the law needs clearer language to define what a fiscal note is and what effects it should measure. Earlier, we talked about how it can be difficult for agencies to prepare estimates for bills that address big reforms or complex proposals. And in these cases, we think it's in legislators' best interest to communicate early, if they can, with agencies about bills, to try to ensure that the agency understands the legislative intent, to see if there are any questions about bill language, and perhaps for the bill author and the agency to have some discussion about possible assumptions in the fiscal note. We also suggest that legislative committees do a better job of planning upcoming schedules to give agencies sufficient notice of the need for fiscal notes. And we also suggest that the legislature improve its orientation for legislators and committee staff regarding fiscal notes. I'll touch briefly on recommendations we made to the Department of Management and Budget. We think through its instructions and through periodic reminders, MMB should do what it can to ensure that agencies show the basis for their estimates. We think in a number of areas they can provide clearer instructions to agencies, for example, on absorbed cost or defining what is a secondary impact or some other areas that we talk about in the report. We suggest that MMB adopt a default due date longer than 5 days for fiscal notes. And I want to explain this because our intent here is not that fiscal notes take longer to prepare than they currently do. I think our intent here is to try to provide a more realistic timeline, especially for those fiscal notes that may be less urgent. Under our recommendation, committee chairs would still have the option of specifying whatever due date they think is appropriate. If there's a need for a fiscal note 2 days from now, that could be part of the request. But for those requests for a fiscal note in which there is no due date specified, our suggestion is pushing back that default due date a little bit would provide a more realistic estimate of when that fiscal note is actually going to be completed based on past experience. Also, in our view, we think the format for pension-related fiscal notes doesn't work very well. We think pension bills have some unique aspects to them that may call for just a different format than a traditional fiscal note, so that state and local impacts can be separately shown, and in some cases to show a longer-term time frame. And finally, state law that authorizes MMB to receive county aid to prepare local impact notes should be followed. We think that MMB should use that money for the purposes in law, and if the law needs to be amended, that's a discussion that MMB should have with the legislature to discuss any possible changes in that law. Our recommendations for state agencies parallel some of those we've already touched on, so I'll just briefly mention them. Again, agencies are the primary drafters of fiscal notes, so we suggest they make greater efforts to make them clear and transparent. We think they should, even if they can't provide dollar estimates of local impacts, do a better job of explaining what those impacts might be. And just as legislators should do what they can to communicate with agencies on complex bills, we think that agencies at times need to reach out to legislators to try to get more more clarity and to communicate a little bit better.
Excuse me, Mr. Alter. Senator Magnus?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alters, I would go back to the pensions here a little bit. I'm trying to keep up in the book once in a while here, but I think it's interesting that you suggested show longer-term impacts and then also the impacts on the state and the locals. You know, could you talk a little bit more about that, Joel? And
what,
Mr. Alter? Madam Chair and Senator Maine.
Because I think that brings up a couple good points there. And looking at long-term and local impacts.
Well, and Dan Jacobson of our office may want to offer some comments here, too, because I know he looked at a number of the pension bills. But keep in mind that, you know, we have not only the state pension system, but the key players in pensions are ones that address local pensions as well. And sometimes there are bills that involve multiple pension systems. And that's when we found, looking at that front page of the fiscal note, sometimes it just is kind of a jumble. I mean, it's hard sometimes to get to a bottom line for the state or for the local entities, which may be what you want to know about with a pension bill. What is going to be the impact on local entities? And I know that the tradition with fiscal notes has been, you know, let's keep that front table focused on the state impact so that we know what the bottom line is for the budget. And I think that's in general been a good rule. But I think with pension bills, they so often have local impacts that it probably makes sense to break those apart. And again, with the long-term impacts, you know, there are a number of cases where pension bills are trying to make changes that might have an effect, positive or negative, on the long-term unfunded liability of the pension fund. And while that can be discussed now in the narrative of the fiscal note, that's a pretty critical thing. And moving that up and even showing it on the front page, at least in some cases, I think would be worthwhile. And I should mention, too, that I think some of our concerns as we reviewed pension bills were also reflected in comments we heard from some of the pension organizations who I think have struggled to work with the front page of the fiscal note and show something meaningful. We have an example in the report of one pension bill that, you know, even based on an actuary's review of the pension bill, where it said that, you know, ultimately it was something that would be a money saver from the state's perspective. But as you looked at the front page of that fiscal note, that was not a message that you would come away from that fiscal note with. So I think it's all about clarity and trying to make sure that the real impact of the pension bill is communicated clearly, and that you don't have to go into the narrative to get what may be some fairly important impacts.
Those are important issues. I know when we have done pension reform and we were increasing the contribution from both the employees and the employers, and we'd say, well, it's only 0.25%. But what is 0.25% across the state for all the local units of government or all the school districts? And I guess I rarely, if ever, noticed that there was an accumulated figure. But it had to be fairly significant. And when you think about it, like if it's for the school districts and 0.25% would be $300 million, when you think about that in relation to what that does on the per pupil formula, that's a significant impact, but we aren't always given that sort of practical information on how it would actually apply and affect our local entities. So,
well, Madam
Senator,
Chair,
Senator Magnus,
and, you know, that's important because, as I said here, I'm concerned about what information we're providing to the local partners here, and how do they access that, and how do they have input in this? And, you know, we keep hearing about mandate relief and all this sort of thing, and then we keep hearing about not only the mandates but pushing more costs down to the locals and have nowhere to go with it. And so, you know, I guess my concern is that we have something that's clear to them, where they can see this and say, you know, call Senator Ingerbetson up and say, this bill doesn't make sense, Senator. We need some changes in this for our local part of this. So that's what I brought the question up to.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems as though we ought to be more disciplined as legislators to always ask the question, what is the local fiscal impact? Because it sounds like one of the biggest concerns is when that question isn't asked, the analysis isn't done, and so we don't have much insight into that. But also the thing that has bothered me most with regard to the fiscal note process is the almost unwillingness of the answer to be absorbing the cost into the regular agency's day-to-day budget. And the reason I say that is because I think in, if you're in the private sector, things change, new tasks are added every single day, and so then it's up to the organization to reprioritize, to let go of things that are no longer important or of priority. Yet it seems as though in the state process, we look at new things for the most part as an add-on rather than as a replacement. And I wondered if you have any thoughts about that from your analysis.
Madam Chair, maybe I'll comment on that. And then, this is Dan Jacobson, and he worked on the pension issue. So we might get to what Dan wants to say and add to that. But Senator Bonhoeff, I agree that that is something that I've observed over the years as I have attended various committee hearings where there have been proposals for an agency to have a responsibility and sometimes a new responsibility. And it seems to me that does present the issue of prioritizing. I do fiscal notes for the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and I think that for us is always the first consideration. You know, I don't mean to hold us out as the model, but it just seems to me that in state government, you're always faced with prioritizing. We all have more responsibilities than we can fulfill on any given day. And so managing is about setting priorities and stretching resources, making choices, and making choices that mean you can do some things and not others. But that shouldn't be a new experience for people in management. In fact, it should be the thing that they're doing every day. So when presented with a bill for a responsibility, it seems to me that is the first consideration you make. Now, I would say, however, that one of the things that can be kind of a complicating factor in the legislative process and in fiscal notes is that you can have presented to you a proposal for some new thing to do, and you say yes to that. We can absorb that. And then you're in another committee and there's another proposal or another bill, and you say yes to that. And I know that my own staff will attest to the fact that I sometimes say yes too many times. And so I hear their groans in the back when I've said yes and then yes and then yes. And you need then some mechanism of saying, well, what's going to happen if we do all three or four or five of those things? Yes, we could absorb one or two, but now we have four or five. And so it's just sort of in the nature of the legislative process and the fiscal note process that sometimes you don't have a mechanism to bring all of those together. Sometimes you can. You can simply go to the chair or legislators and say, you know, now I have five things, and it may, if we do all of them, it may require some additional resources. But absolutely on your central point, I think the first consideration by anybody as a manager in state government should be, how do I prioritize?
On that point,
Senator
Madam Chair.
Bonner.
So I don't know how to change that practice. I think it's a cultural shift, and perhaps that's just leadership stemming from that. I can attest that that is how you manage your department, because I remember in the Sunset Commission review, when we asked you to take on a significantly expanded responsibility, your first response was yes. And we really appreciated that. And then, of course, we got a lot of pushback from others who, you know, weren't so sure that was the right response.
I know, and typically we do have fiscal notes for all kinds of little projects that people ask for. And I was impressed last week when Senator Daley was in here, and he had the bill that was asking MMB to do reviews of what would happen if the federal funds were disappearing on us and how we would address that. And MMB did at that point give us a fiscal note, and they said, yes, there could be some cost to this, but they didn't quantify it. because they expected that they would absorb it as part of their regular budget process. And I was pleased to see that, because it doesn't normally happen, that, yes, this is a priority of their agency to take care of the budget. And so even though we're asking for something that maybe they haven't always looked at, they realize that that's part of the budgeting process, and they didn't put a note on it. But that is a rare exception, but I did note it. It was a good thing to see.
And Madam Chair, I agree, and I noted it too. And just for some may not be aware, but the Department of Admin is implementing the lean practice with many of our agencies and various departments within agencies. And I think the more we do that kind of revisiting all of our practices and processes, the more we'll end up with that culture.
Thank you. Chair, I don't know if you have other questions about the pension issue, but Dan Jacobson worked on it. Do you want to offer any?
Mr. Jacobson, would you like to give us a little more oversight into that?
Madam Chair, yes. The point I wanted to emphasize was that the structure of the fiscal notes is that it would just show the short-term impact over a four-year period. And we would like just that fiscal notes would show not only the short-term impact, but also the long-term impact, particularly the impact on the unfunded liability. And under the current structure, you only can put in one number. And sometimes they include some of the impact on the unfunded liability, but it's not apparent when you look at the front page. You can't tell, are they including both one or not? And we would like the fiscal note to separately show each of them, so you can tell, you know, both the impact on the short-term budgets and on the longer-term impact on the unfunded liability.
Senator Stump.
On thank you, Madam Chair. On the long-term impact, most of the, well, I think all the pension funds use actuaries that will have that information available. And supposedly the actuaries are, I know they're paid through the pension system, but they're supposed to be kind of non-biased information, and that's available. Why couldn't they just take that information as far as the unfunded liabilities and use that? I mean, it would be very expensive, I think, to have your own long-term studies done. I mean, those studies run, you know, thousands, maybe sometimes tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases. So I think we have to. I think the information's available. And if I understand you correctly, it's just not on that front page.
Senator,
Mr.
Madam
Jacobson.
Chair, yes, that you are correct. Often actuaries do prepare estimates of the impacts of bills, and it's just not clear from the front page whether or not that's included. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not included fully. And I would like to see a restructure or some additional tables presented that would summarize that information.
It would be helpful. And when we see those bills, it's always right at the end of session, because they've been bouncing around, you know, from state government to the pension committee to state government, and then they come to us. And a lot of times we don't see the real big full impact of long range and what it does for the local units of government.
Madam Chair, one other comment. I've been listening and thinking. I think part of the problem is that the legislative process, in order to put a more complete picture together, basically we've over the years used a term called targets to try to comprehend the whole picture in terms of our budget. And it's difficult for the legislature to come up with those targets, but it's very difficult for the divisions to operate unless they have targets, because you're hearing bills and you're basically all you can do is set either put the bills on the table or set them aside or something until you actually have some parameters to work within. And I think that's the problem that the legislature doesn't really, I mean, we can ask for fiscal notes, but I think we're generating a lot of extra work for the agencies when we really don't know whether we need it. Classic examples are in the K-12 funding system. I mean, if you get a bill in to raise the general education aid formula by $300 or $500, we've seen bills like $500 per pupil. Well, you know you're not going to pass it because even if we were flush, it's going to run into, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So why would we, out of respect for the individual legislator, we could ask for the fiscal note and have in the past, but I mean, to some extent, you kind of make a discretionary decision say, well, this is kind of like pie in the sky. There's no way that we're going to do it. Sometimes we don't really know what we're going to do until we get the targets, and so we don't ask for fiscal notes ahead of time, and consequently, this backup that. Madam Chair, that you mentioned occurs, and then all of a sudden there's a rush for fiscal notes.
That's Madam true. Chair, this is maybe an opportunity for us to wrap up with some of the options we considered, because when you talk about changes in education aids, as all of you know, over the years, the legislature has really built up some capacity within the legislative branch with some data and modeling of what the impact of changes in the education aids would be. So we did consider, as some have proposed within the legislative branch, that the fiscal note process be brought more fully into the legislature. As Mr. Alter said, that is the case in many states. We did consider that as an option, and so maybe if we could transition to some of the things we considered but don't necessarily recommend but are certainly still viable possibilities for you to consider.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, and again, these are options that we lay out in the report. We kind of talk about the pros and cons, but we didn't think the evidence was compelling enough to offer a recommendation. And I think in the case of assigning responsibility for fiscal notes to the legislature, again, we could do that. Other states do it. Jim just mentioned, in the case of education fiscal notes, it's sort of interesting. In the House of Representatives, those fiscal estimates are prepared by the legislature's staff, typically, rather than through a fiscal note request to the agency. In the Senate, for education bills that affect a funding formula, there is typically a fiscal note request that is submitted for that. But, I mean, we do have some experience of our own in Minnesota, such as Ed just mentioned, where sometimes legislative staff do have the discretion to develop fiscal estimates, and I think the key thing is, do they have the expertise and the data to do it? And I think that's what we learned as we looked at other states, is that even in those states where legislative agencies are the ones that officially sign off on the fiscal notes, they typically rely to a very large extent on executive branch agencies. In some cases, it's almost a rubber stamp. In other cases, they are soliciting information from other sources or doing their own analysis. But in virtually every state, the executive branch provides a lot of the data, the expertise, and sometimes the estimates that are ultimately used.
We do have Eric Nauman in the Senate Fiscal Analyst Department that does give us runs on all of those education bills. And I don't know, he maybe consults with the department, but I think he has over the years kind of perfected that himself too.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And it's interesting that Eric, again, usually submits the request because that's kind of the expectation of that committee, that the department will be asked to provide an estimate. But then Senate staff do kind of an independent look at that. It's sort of a check on on what the agencies come up with, but they're all working, I think, from some formulas that they use in common. So it's generally worked well, I think.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, and I think we wonder what we'd ever do if Tom Melcher retired. But you know, the kind of relationship that's been built there between the committee and the fiscal analyst has been helpful. I think we have great confidence in the information that we receive.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, another option would be to consider some type of an appeals process for fiscal note to establish some sort of a venue within the legislature for challenging certain estimates. There's been bills a couple of times to propose something like this. I think the questions that we raise about this possibility is, first of all, could it be done in a timely manner, particularly when you consider that, you know, fiscal notes are typically in the latter part of the legislative session at a time when everything else is coming due. It might be difficult for an appeals process to handle whatever challenges are being brought forward in a timely way. And the other question that some have raised is, does it make sense to have a formal process for hearing appeals of fiscal notes when, in fact, fiscal notes themselves are purely advisory? The legislature doesn't have to, if it gets an estimate that, you know, preparing a particular report would cost $100,000, the legislature doesn't have to go with that and include an appropriation for that. And so I think that's an interesting issue to think about, too.
Mr. Alter, as I reviewed your report, that was an issue that was very intriguing to me, the possible appeal. And I don't know if any other states have done something like it, but I know whether it was the Pawlenty administration and the Democrats questioning the fiscal notes from them or us questioning the fiscal notes from the Dayton administration, there's always questions. And last year, I know we had several major differences. But as you had mentioned earlier, it was more on cost savings. We had, for example, proposed the tax analytics program. Saw in other states it had brought in so much revenue, we could not get any fiscal impact on it, zero. That was what would be booked according to MMB. And certainly there was disagreement over that. And so, you know, how do you appeal that? The governor said that if we used our estimates, it would not be considered a completed budget. And yet they are advisory in nature. And so we went back and forth, and I'm sure that's why this request for this review was put in place, because people were frustrated with that and several others that were very big amounts of money, actually. You know, and I'm just wondering how would an appeal work? Would we require them to go out and look at what other states have done? How, if they use the same information, they may come up with the same results. So how could we get a different look at the situation if there was an appeal?
Madam Chair, I think the bills that were proposed in the past for an appeals process essentially required, if there was a challenge to a fiscal note, that then the agency that prepared it would come in before the appeals body, defend the estimate. And I don't think there was an expectation that there would be a tremendous amount of research during this process by the appeals body or its staff, because it would obviously have to happen in a fairly short time, but that the appeals body would hear it and would say, does that make sense? And there was actually a provision in the bill that, depending on how the appeals body acted, that would be kind of the final word, that if, you know, they decided that the proper amount was $200,000 instead of $500,000, that's what would be used for presumably budget purposes. You know, one other point on this to make is that there is certainly opportunity, if not through a formal appeals process, I think more informally through the staff that served the legislature, to get some other perspective on fiscal notes that are working their way through the process. That's partly why you have fiscal analysts who look closely at bills and at fiscal notes related to those bills. And they are maybe not as much as the agencies, but they are subject matter experts. and they may be able to offer an opinion, maybe even on occasion a memo that says, you know, here's kind of where I would take issue with what the agency has said. So, I mean, I think that there are some steps potentially between an appeals process on the one hand and nothing. And I think some of those things happen now informally and perhaps could be done more than they are.
Madam Chair, I would just add to that that I think we have to recognize that not all fiscal notes are equal in terms of their ability to use data, demographic data or other data, to come to an estimate. I mean, particularly in this area, we're moving into the arena of some economic theory about what will happen not only with the application of a software package, which you refer to, but how people will respond to their tax filings and other kinds of things. This is not a new arena, though, totally new for the legislature working out with the Department of Revenue what will happen with more compliance efforts by whatever means, whether it's analytic tools, more auditors, or whatever. I think the point I make is that there is room for differences of opinion based not just on the data but the assumptions that are being used. Where are we on what is called the utility curve of getting compliance? You have to take into consideration where we are in terms of past efforts. We actually did an evaluation of the Department of Revenue's tax compliance efforts, and there is some point of diminishing returns with whatever tools you apply. I think you have to talk about that, but people will not always come to the same conclusion. So I think, frankly, the governor's office and the legislature have to recognize that just because the Department of Revenue does an estimate or somebody else does an estimate, it isn't somehow now carved on tablets from on high. They are based on things that are subject to question and scrutiny and differences of opinion from well-informed people. So, again, I think it's to this point about what impact should fiscal notes have. And frankly, I don't think they can all be equal. I think some you can have the expectation that we have some pretty solid data and we can run some numbers like on school aids. We have a lot of data on how many students are out there. We know how many kids are 6 years old and 7 years old, and we know a lot of things that are for certain. But once we venture into economic theory, for example, again, we looked at this, how many jobs will a bill for Job Z or for a bonding bill create? There's differences of opinion about that. What impact in terms of revenue will tax breaks have? A lot of differences of opinion. So when you get those kinds of fiscal notes, there is room, I think, for legitimate differences and not to sort of put a stake in the ground or a line in the sand and say, you know, that fiscal note is the for sure statement of what the impact is going to be and everybody has to adhere to it.
Well, if we had an appeals board, I would imagine it would have to have representatives from the legislature and the administration so that both sides would end up accepting the outcome. Was there any examples of that you saw in any other states?
Madam Chair, we have some discussion of there are a couple of other states that have an appeals process, and I think our discussion of the appeals process is on page 86. I'm trying to remember which states those were. And how they're set up. I know that in one case there is, rather than an appeal to a body, that there is a provision that in that state there is a legislative office that would essentially do an independent review and come to its own conclusion. And my understanding in that state is that that's something that hasn't been done frequently, but that's the idea, is that for those cases where it really comes to an impasse, that there would be some other entity that could render it a judgment.
Thank you. That's something for us to think about, members.
Madam Chair, a couple other options. There are a few states that provide bill authors with an opportunity to either rebut or provide a commentary right within the fiscal note and say, I agree, or I don't like what the agency assumed here. That could be done. It might add time to the process, and that's a consideration. One other thing that some people suggested is, why not have a process for reviewing after the fact whether fiscal note estimates prove to be accurate? And I think that's interesting. It would also be challenging to do for a number of reasons. One is that keep in mind that a small portion of bills pass, and it would only be the bills that pass on which we could do this kind of analysis. Also keep in mind that it's not unusual for a fiscal note to be developed on a version of the bill that is somewhat different, or in some cases quite different, from the version of the bill that passes. You would have to factor that into the analysis somehow. Typically, an analysis like this would be done several years after the fact, so it's not the most timely thing. And also keep in mind that agencies don't always, and maybe don't usually, separately track the impact of legislation apart from all the other costs in their budget. It's not always easy to tease out from an agency's expenditures what portion of those expenditures were a direct result of legislation that passed. So I know there have been a couple of states that have tried to do this. Sometimes they end up relying on the executive branch agencies to make their best estimate of what the actual cost turned out to be. I'm not sure if that's exactly what you have in mind or not. So, Madam Chair, just to conclude and summarize our presentation, overall, I think the message of this report is partly that this task of developing fiscal notes is a difficult one, especially when timelines are short and when there are a lot of them that have been requested. And, in fact, we found that at times problems have occurred. There have been some questionable assumptions, some lack of clarity about the estimates, and certainly in those cases where that happens, it's frustrating for legislators. On the other hand, I think we're trying to convey in this report that while that has happened, those types of problems are not pervasive. So we suggest trying to improve what we currently have in Minnesota's fiscal note system, trying to ensure that fiscal notes are clear and transparent, that there is adequate communication between agencies and bill authors, and that there be some expectations set forth in statute that fiscal notes be prepared for bills that are working their way through the process. With that, I'll conclude, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions from members? Mr. Nobles?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for this opportunity. I think this is going to be a report that will be digested over time, and hope that it will help you and the executive branch and others that participate in the fiscal note process to, as Mr. Alter said, improve it. Because, again, I go back to what I said at the beginning, if there is doubt about the accuracy, objectivity, and if there are concerns about timeliness, you know, it really diminishes the value of the fiscal notes. And yet we do think it can be and should be a useful tool for the legislature.
And I will note that you have also brought up the issue that they are advisory, that there's no requirement in law that we accept them as they're given to us. And, you know, we had debate about that last year as well. We do have Margaret Kelly, our state budget director, and Michelle Weber from the budget operations from MMB here. I don't know if they welcome, and maybe you would like to make some comments since it's your agency that has to sign off on these fiscal notes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Margaret Kelly, State Budget Director with MMB. And I just wanted to comment briefly to say I appreciate the thorough and professional work that the Office of the Legislative Auditor did on this report, and appreciate the evaluation that it reflects the complexity of the fiscal note process. And that while everyone questions the issue of bias and influence in the fiscal note system, we strive at MMB to make them be as objective as possible. And it is reassuring to hear from the Legislative Auditor's Office that transparency and better communication can go a long way in improving our confidence in the fiscal note system. And we are working at that in MMB. We are going to implement as many of the recommendations as we can in an effort to improve transparency and communication between the legislature agencies and MMB. Some of the recommendations we will struggle to implement because of the age of our system, that it will just not be possible to make some of the technical changes we would need to make. But we will work hard to improve communication and transparency in the fiscal notes.
Ms. Kelly, how often do you find that the agency is speaking with the author of the bill, for example? Do the legislators make an effort to contact the agency? I imagine they're not quite sure who they should contact. They don't necessarily have the name of a person who's working on the fiscal note. Or do the fiscal analysts in the various agencies perhaps contact authors? I guess I haven't had that happen much at all, and I'm wondering if maybe that's a practice that we might initiate more often so that there's an understanding of what the author's intent is, too, as the bill has been drafted. Maybe somebody's seen more in it than the author intended, and it needs to be further clarified. What has been your experience with that?
Madam Chair, it's been a long time since I have written and reviewed fiscal notes myself. So I can't speak to the current practice. Perhaps someone from the OLA could speak more to that, or Michelle could speak to that. But I do know that we are updating or revising our instructions to agencies to encourage them to do more of that communication with authors and with fiscal staff. I know currently there's often a lot of communication back and forth with fiscal staff between agencies and your staff.
Welcome, Ms. Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Michelle Weber, and I'm a team leader in the Budget Operations section at Minnesota Management and Budget. And, Madam Chair, that what Ms. Kelly suggested is correct. What we've done is we've met with both the agency fiscal note coordinators this fall, as well as the fiscal analysts. And what we're working to do is strengthen the at least the first line of communication to be between the agency fiscal note coordinator and their fiscal analyst representing their committee, as well as their executive budget officer at MMB. And then collectively, they might suggest that a discussion with the author is appropriate.
Okay. I think that would be appreciated. The other issue I was just going to ask about is the timing issue. Has your agency struggled with, you know, with the 5-day time frame quite a bit? I noticed that only 38% of the fiscal notes actually were generated in that time frame. So what is your response to the change, the recommendation that we give an automatic lengthier time, but if there's a request for a couple of days that be put on there? I'm just wondering how you would deal with that.
Madam Chair, first of all, I want to recognize the work that the fiscal analysts do with the agencies to try and help the agencies prioritize the requests that an agency might be facing, particularly our Department of Human Services, Department of Education, those agencies that receive a significant number of requests. The fiscal analysts do work with those agencies to help them prioritize those requests. What we're doing at MMB is we have, as of yesterday, we've increased the default due date for a non-urgent fiscal note to be 8 working days, and then for urgent requests to be 4 working days. In addition, the system does allow for the fiscal analyst to indicate a specific due date for a fiscal note in the system, so there are essentially 3 options available, and hopefully that will help to manage the workload and prioritization of fiscal notes and ensure that they are presented to the legislature in a timely manner.
Members, does that sound like something that's going to be workable for you? Senator Higgins?
I'm sure 4 days doesn't sound very darn urgent to me. That's just 1 day shorter than our normal process was before, and that's not urgent. Urgent is a day or two, unfortunately, in the world we live in.
Well, you do have the date request. So if it comes in that they need it in 2 days, is it that something you might be able to honor?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Higgins. We do allow for a date to be indicated in the system. So if it's a one-day turnaround, what we would encourage is for the fiscal analysts to get in touch with both MMB and the agency to let them know about it. And our policy at MMB is if it's a 24-hour turnaround, we also, in addition to entering the fiscal note in the fiscal note system, we make a call to the agency to give them a heads up that this is a very quick turnaround for a fiscal note. Our current practice prior to changing the date for urgent notes to 4 days was 3 days. So we've just added one additional day to the urgent, to the what the system generates as urgent.
Are there any other questions? If not, we thank you all for coming today and for the report. And it is something that we certainly will be mulling over and looking at the recommendations and the options that are available to us. And we hope that this, you know, helps us keep this system streamlined and reliable and trustworthy for our members as we continue to go forward. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.